implementation report one last time, just to make sure that we basically, you know, we're saying, okay, the we made this recommendation, and the implementation committee said this about it. Now, the thing, of course, that's missing is the implementation committee didn't say anything about our recommendations to the ICANN staff. So we...
Good morning, it's Christy.
Hi, Christy. I was just saying, Christy, that the implementation committee didn't say anything about the recommendations that we made to the ICANN staff. And so we just need to be sure, as we are looking at this, that we've that we're addressing very clearly if there's been any other comments related to that part of our report that we need to take into further account. Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, this is Ritika.
Hi, Ritika. We're gathering a bit slowly this morning, or afternoon, depending on where the timing is. So it's Tony and me and Christy and Ritika, and Thomas is going to be a few minutes late, but I'm hoping that Lorenz and Steve will be here.
How was the call yesterday?
Very productive. And you know, what call are you asking me about?
There was an implementation committee call with the transfers and who is task force.
On implementation, we can turn to Tony and ask him about that. We also had a transfers task force call.
Oh, wow. Gosh, you had a really busy day.
Well, I'm not doing the implementation.
No, I wasn't on that yesterday. You have to ask Steve.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve. Well, last week, I really felt like all the different voices were being heard or different, you know, sects were being represented.
Yeah.
I wasn't so worried about it. We're busy rewriting some functionality for this medical website. It needs to be done ASAP, so I just programmed right through it.
Ritika, were you on?
No, I didn't make it yesterday.
Okay.
Are you sure there was a call yesterday?
Glenn would know.
Doesn't sound like it.
There was an implementation WHOIS committee yesterday.
Oh, there was.
Yes, and on the call was Bruce Beckwith, Ken Stubbs, Tim Ruiz, Ilana Brotman, Thomas, who was very present, Bruce and Donna and Steve Mahalovich from NSI.
Excellent. So you were there also, Glenn?
Yes.
What did you think? How did it go?
I think it went very well.
It's actually done. I mean, actually, the work of both of those groups is done. So I guess actually, I'm a little wondering why we don't have folks on the phone here.
I think Ken might not be able to make it, Marilyn. He said something about that in an email.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Abel.
Hey, Abel.
Hey, Marilyn.
I guess actually Steve that we, and Lorenz that we don't have, let me try calling Steve.
Abel, did you get my email in order?
Yeah, thank you.
Fine.
Yeah, yesterday, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, and I got your message as well. Thanks very much.
Hi, is anybody there?
Tony, I'm freezing. There's snow on the ground.
There's a lot of people here, Tony. I think.
No, just a couple of us.
Okay.
Yeah, well, there was a sudden silence, and I sort of wondered if I'd been cut off.
Yeah, we wouldn't cut you off.
Okay, guys.
No, you wouldn't, but our technicians in the office do that all the time.
Good
every
afternoon.
Time, every time they open the operations center, they cut me off.
Thank you.
No.
I hear Thomas.
Yes.
Great. And will you just, for the record, go ahead and do a roll call, and then we will go ahead and get started. Steve is on the phone, so I'm assuming he will join us as soon as he can.
We've got Tony Harris, Marilyn, Christy McKee, Rushika Agrawal, Abel, and Thomas. Is that right?
So we are missing, at this point, we don't have anyone from the IPC, and we don't have anyone from the registrars or the registries.
That's right.
Okay.
Land of opportunities.
Right. We can do a job on that.
Remember, this is on the MP3 recording, and both Philip and I, as the co-chairs, would not allow that.
That's okay.
Tony, it must be warm down there.
Okay.
Okay.
It is, yeah.
Okay. What I have in front of me is...
Becky, by the way, I've joined.
Becky, thank God you're here. Tony was just about to edit everything out that had any interest for the registries.
Or registrars or IPC.
We were going to have a very short report. The call was going to start.
Indeed.
Okay, what I have in front of me is the policy report that we filed in November. I have the final report of the... GNSO Council's Suicide Task Force on Accuracy and Bulk Access that Thomas has done. I have Steve's analysis of the Suicide Implementation Committee.
Has Steve said anything new today?
I don't have anything new from him.
Okay.
I'm looking at the draft from 127.
Okay.
I have the two documents that Bruce originally did where he... summarized our recommendations in a slightly different format, and I have the implementation report. And I have the three-page document from the European Commission. And that's all the paper I put on my desk. Okay.
It's only a couple of hours reading, that's all.
Oh, wait a minute. I have one more piece of paper on my desk. I have the security... advisory committee, the who is recommendation of the stability, security and stability advisory committee. Okay. Here's what I think the work is we still have before us. We need to look at the implementation report. We need to talk about the, I guess I am missing a piece of paper. We need to talk about the decision, the interpretation that Louis did for us on 15 days. And we need to align all of our work into the final report that Thomas is pulling together. And figure out how we address, because I keep needing to remind people that the implementation committee's report did not address the recommendations we made to ICANN. So we have got to make sure that we address whether any new input we've received is relevant to that part of our recommendation.
That's right.
So we can incorporate that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to do is say that when Steve gets on the phone, which I assume will, then I'd like to provide a short update on my conversation with Louie relative to the communique from the European Commission, the three-page thing, which supplements. And actually, I can do it now, and then I can repeat it. Part of our discussion on the last call included a discussion about what sort of standing did this particular submission have. And I went back to Louis, and Louis read me a significant amount, if not all, of the transmittal document to ICANN that this was attached to. And it says something like the following. I am paraphrasing it. I was in my car, but here's my recollection. It came to us from a more senior person than the person who was provided to us as contact, and it is Philippe, and I cannot remember his last name. I will have to get it, but he is in the media and data protection part of internal market, and the communication was addressed to ICANN and said that the commission is following the work of the WHOIS task force with interest and looks forward to being involved in further work and discussions related to WHOIS as it is undertaken by ICANN. And then it goes on to say, sort of in the meantime, that's not exactly the phrase, but it was something like that, maybe at this time, that they were pleased to provide a contribution to the WHOIS task force on the reports that we are producing, and that they look forward to discussing the questions that they have about our report. Louis's suggestion to us is that we should not ignore this, but that we should have a dialogue with them that is based on Q&A, them being able to ask us questions about our final report, and are being able to clarify and to ask them questions, but not make any judgments about this three-page submission. He will be on the call with us, but believe that he did the appropriate thing, and that is, since the transmittal came to ICANN, what he could have done was to have sent the transmittal to the board and dealt with it at the staff level. He sent it to what he considers the appropriate vehicle at ICANN to be responsive, and that is the task force of the council that is dealing with WHOIS. Comments?
Is the question on the table whether, I mean, I certainly think it was perfectly reasonable for Louis to send it to this group and ask for a coordinated response. That makes a lot of sense to me.
The question, I didn't have a question originally. I presented this, I sent it to Tony to advise him that we had received it from, I think Louis sent it to both of us. I'd sent Tony a note saying we would put it on the agenda. I had proposed to the task force that we respond by suggesting that it would be appropriate for us to have a dialogue with them after we published our final report, so that we're both looking at the final report. And there's been some discussion on the last call, and that's why we'll need to take this up again. I think that some have expressed a concern about there being any engagement.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say that, well, at least from my perspective, clearly there needs some engagement. I was curious, and I know Louis is quite clear that this was vetted with DG Information Society folks, and so it represents the views of the ICANN folks as well as the views of the data protection folks at the commission, and therefore necessarily needs to be taken seriously. My only question was, and I think Steve probably is in a better place to answer that question, is what the level of input within DG Internal Market from the intellectual property and trademark organizations was, and whether that would provide any sort of opportunity for kind of quiet intervention, maybe in addition to whatever dialogue we engage in.
I would assume that if the Department of Commerce in the U.S. approached this committee, this task force, and asked to have a conversation, and separately the Department of State approached us and asked to have a conversation, that we would probably talk to both of them.
Hi, this is Steve Metallin. Sorry, I'm late.
Hi, Steve. That may just be a speculation on my part, Becky.
So you would say that in terms of the approach to the IP.
Well, let's bring Steve up to date, because we had waited for a while, and then we had I had just briefed people, and I'd left you a message with some clarification on your voicemail of my conversation with Louie about where the mission came from and the transmittal letter that came with it, and I had just briefed the task force on Louie had told me.
Okay.
And Becky, sorry, I just wanted to be sure that Steve was on board.
Yeah, no, that's right. And Louie is certainly of the view that the communication or contribution was vetted at least with DG Info Society at a fairly high level. And so my question was just whether there were, you know, what the opportunity we had for a quiet backdoor approach through the IP and trademark branches at DG Internal Markets.
So it's very appropriate that Steve arrived at this time.
We don't believe that this was vetted in Internal Market.
Right, but it might have been vetted in Info Society and not Internal Market.
I think so.
But be that as it may, we still need to have, it's Louie's recommendation to us that we still need to have a consultation with them about our report and answer any questions that are related to the report. But
well, they've commented on a six-month-old version of our report, so what would it be helpful to make sure they're up to date? Of course, I don't know where our report stands at this precise instance, but they obviously need some updated information about
that. Yeah, that was sorry you missed it. We did wait for just a bit. The suggestion that I made was that we finish our report and make sure that is the report that we would be discussing. I think that's what you were consistent with what you were saying?
Yeah, all I'm saying is that they're commenting on an old version. But,
okay.
But I'm still not sure. I don't know exactly what the cover letter said or what it asked or maybe I missed something in your message, but
The cover letter said that the task force, that the commission has been following the work of the WHOIS task force with interest, and that the commission looks forward to being involved in any further work that ICANN undertakes on WHOIS. And in the meantime, or at this time, I can't remember which, because he was reading it to me, that the they offer a contribution which is relative to the reports that the task force is publishing, and looks forward to discussing those comments and the reports, something of that nature.
Might I step in, Marilyn?
Please.
Wouldn't this document be part of the comments section of our report? That's the first thing. And the second thing is, what I think is most important is that in their report is the suggestion that we go to a differentiated access mode where, you know, they're saying that the basic technical data should be available to anybody for free or you know, you can access at any time. But people looking for more information, such as for trademark infringement, should have a differentiated access mode. And that really belongs to the issues we have to look at, right?
Right. It's more. It doesn't really respond to anything that's in the report that we're going to file. It responds more to issues that we discussed later, right?
Yeah, that's my perception, anyhow.
I agree. I think it fits right into the searchability report.
Well, they do mention that issue too, although.
Mm-hmm. Again, well, we're kind of hanging our head on differentiated access over in searchability land still, so.
Because that cuts to the privacy, the personal privacy thing, which they're so concerned with.
Right.
If you have differentiated access, you resolve the privacy question.
Guys, let's just go. We did this at the last call. I'll just reiterate this. And there are also comments in the report which support our present work. Concerning the final conclusions of the report, the Commission wishes to state its support for the proposals concerning accuracy of the data. And
well, they're commenting on what was in there 6 months ago.
I don't think our comments about accuracy of data have changed a great deal.
Oh,
yeah.
I think so.
And there is another very strong comment which says that bulk access for any purpose, not only for direct marketing, is in principle unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Can we put this conversation on the side because we're not going to resolve it, and we need to focus on the report, which we must resolve, and then we can come back to this if that's okay with everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Thomas, can I ask you, well, I have the implementation analysis in front of me. Can I ask, I guess Pacheco was not on the call, but Steve and Thomas were, anything that you want to call our attention to from the implementation report? What we did yesterday on the transfers report is we walked through it to try to make sure that the entire task force understood any such suggested changes. And there is some suggested replacement tests that I think that the task force needs to discuss. So could we maybe start with that implementation report, the suggested replacement, reach agreement on what our decisions are or what else we need to resolve, and then go back to the final report?
My only proposal would be that I'm not at home and I don't have the implementation report in front of me, but I do have a laptop with the final report, so I would actually prefer to take the final report draft as a guideline. It roughly matches the order of points in the implementation report, and I think with a little help from Steve, it should be relatively easy to map things to enforce. I think I have the section numbers in the back of my mind still, so this should be workable.
Okay, I need to ask a point of clarification here. We have a set of recommendations in our final report.
In the draft.
Yeah, the December document. Right? The December document.
I'm sorry, which one? The December?
The December document. The draft. I'm not talking about your new document.
Okay, you're talking about the policy report.
The policy report. We have a set of recommendations in that. There's a big section up front, which is about actions for ICANN staff. Right?
Here.
So, and I'm sorry, I'm looking for it right now. So, how are we dealing with we did get a lot of complaints last time that our report was a little hard to follow, and I'm realizing that as we're redrafting, we have the opportunity possibly to try to make it as clearly organized as possible. So what's the best strategy for us? Do we start with the ICANN actions, or start with the what has to be voted on? We have to present this to the council, but what has to be voted is the consensus part. So I would assume it would make sense to lead with the part that needs to be voted. Does that make sense to everyone, even though that means a different structure than the policy report? I must not have been clear. Sorry.
Didn't we already discuss it last time?
Well, Thomas, where is the recommendations for the ICANN staff?
In the file, in which document?
In your document.
My draft, it is 1.3, practical recommendations.
Ah, sorry.
The organization is right now, chapter one is recommendations, first consensus policies on accuracy,
right.
Two of them, two consensus policies on bulk access, three practical recommendations on accuracy, we don't make practical recommendations on bulk access, and four, a proposed review process, which is basically another recommendation for ICANN staff and was one of the recommendations of the implementation committee. So that's one of the things.
Okay, I'm
later.
Sorry about that. I misunderstood. So, but instead of practical recommendations, I think it should probably maybe say recommendations to ICANN.
It is not just to ICANN, but also to registrars. It's both.
I think we need to. Why don't we come back to that issue? We don't want to miss. Then we would need to have those separated, I think, and have a section that is labeled as this is now enforcement of existing contractual obligations. It probably should be. A, and then if there's anything in here that is specific to a registrar, we ought to put it in a section labeled, and I think this now is D, probably, right? Let me come back and look at it with you, but it needs to be very clear that people can pull it out and say, and this is part of Bruce's comment to me about people can pull it out and say, 3A clearly is ICANN enforcement responsibilities or recommendations. 3B is still advisory to ICANN. 3C is recommendations for registrars or registries. So that it's very clear, other people who aren't us, since that's one of the broadest complaints that I got. Let me go back to...
Maybe we just really walk through this point by point. I think that may make it easiest to classify things as
Good.
We go through it.
Good.
So the way I would propose to do it is, first of all, I would give you a brief... I would tell you where... to what part of the December report something specific corresponds, what the implementation committee says about it, and what's right in our draft at this point of time. And I'd need some feedback from you guys if whether or not I get the section numbers in the implementation committee report right or wrong. I may be erring on these because I don't have a copy in front of me. I have the two other documents here. Okay, so first 1.1 is consensus policies on accuracy of who is data. That's the old chapter 3.1, Roman 3, RAA changes. The first one read in our policy report as follows, registrants should be required to review and validate all WHOIS data upon renewal of a registration. The specifics of required validation remain to be determined by this task force or another appropriate body. What the implementation committee said about this, and that's their first observed policy, I think, is that, first of all, there needs to be some more meat to what review and validate means. The result of this additional meat was to say the current WHOIS information should be presented to the registrant and they should get an opportunity to correct it. And the second objection, which was discussed on yesterday's call, was that some registrars were concerned about coupling this activity to the point of time where renewal happens, and the implementation committee ended up with a suggestion that registrars should present WHOIS data to registrants on an annual basis and give them an opportunity to correct it, but that it does not have to be tied to renewal. A side effect of this is that you get a more frequent review with WHOIS data of domain names which have been registered for multiple years. With a 10-year registration, our old proposal would have meant that data would be reviewed once in 10 years. And the final report draft concerning this particular recommendation just repeats what the implementation committee has suggested as alternative wording. I think in the discussions we had so far, there's no reason to think that anyone here has an objection against that. If there is one, this may be the moment to discuss it.
Can I just make two comments about this? This wording came up in the last 24 hours, so I don't have any objection to it. But I'm a little concerned. I think we may want to think of some way to make it clear that this is the implementation committee's proposal. It doesn't originate with us, because this is far more burdensome to registrars than what we proposed. This is annually.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Ours was at the time of renewal, which might be many years later. So I have no problem with it, but I don't. We just should make it clear that this is what the implementation committee, in effect, the registrar, said they wanted.
Yeah.
I have added a cautionary note in front of these two policies, which says these two policies match the alternative wording proposed in the implementation committee's report, sections 1 and 2.
Good morning. It's Ken Stubbs. I apologize for getting in late, but this call was kind of a bit of a surprise for me. So.
Hi, Ken.
Sorry, Kim, we had to schedule it maybe last time on the call when you weren't here, because we have so much work we still have.
Oh, I understand. I just didn't want you to think
sure.
of being removed.
No, Tom, I have a question for both of you, and I'm just struggling with something about consistency of. I have no problem with the proposed change. I do think it's helpful to have a footnote, as I think Steve, maybe a footnote or you know, the task force, something in different type, which says the task force accepted modified recommendation presented and agreed to by the implementation committee, modified language or something of that nature. I think that would be a really good addition.
That could substitute for what you have there in italics.
Yes.
But I think it's helpful to make it clear that this is a change, and it's the implementation committee's change. We accept it.
I think that's a good idea for two reasons.
Sections 1 and
2. Down the road, people are going to know that this isn't something that, quote, got slid by or something like that. That, you know.
Right.
I think it would be sufficient if I just add the words, which was accepted by the WHOIS task force. These two policies match the alternative wording proposed in the implementation committee's report, sections 1 and 2, which was accepted by the WHOIS task force. Is that sufficient?
Works for me.
I'm okay with that. We just need to be prepared in case someone says we're heaping more responsibilities on the registrars.
I think that a more detailed discussion of this particular change would be in your chapter 2 anyway, Steve. So I think that would be the second place to pick it up. The part we're talking about right now is just really the summary of the hard recommendations, the thing which is voted. And the discussion would be in chapter 2, which would be based on the draft you circulated a week ago or something like that, and which would repeat the old recommendations and say this alternative wording was proposed, we think it's acceptable, and stuff like that. So anyway, I think we can now go on to the next policy recommendation. That's the old 3B. No.
3.1, Roman 3.
Okay. RAA changes B. The original text was, when registrations are deleted on the basis of submission of false contact data or non-response to registrar inquiries, the redemption grace period, once implemented, should be applied. However, the redeemed domain name should not be included in the zone file until accurate and verified contact information is available. The details of this procedure are under investigation in the Names Council's Deletes Task Force. And this was also discussed on the implementation committee. They had some, they had some reservations about that accurate and verified language, and one intermediate version of this recommendation in the implementation committee made reference to the proposed elaborate process they wanted to have, which would include some kind of dispute resolution between the complainant and the domain name holder. Since this particular this dispute resolution part was dropped yesterday, and this entire proposal isn't a consensus policy at this point, so it would not be appropriate for a consensus policy to explicitly reference it. So the remaining text which came out of this was, when registrations are deleted on the basis of submission of false contact data or non-response to registrar inquiries, the redemption grace period, once implemented, should be applied. However, the redeemed domain name should be placed in registrar hold status until the registrar has provided updated WHOIS information to the registrar of record. This is a bit less specific, but I suppose it should be an acceptable change. Comments?
Steve and Wachika, the discussion that has gone on the implementation committee that the three of you have heard, this would put, but registrar hold makes the name go dark, or just means it can't be transferred?
Name go dark.
Pardon?
Registrar hold means that the name is removed from the zone file.
Okay.
Now, registrar locked means that it can't be.
Got it, yes. Thank you, Ken.
That's all right. I get confused all the time.
We're going to have to create a whole new dictionary of ICANN idioms.
I'm fine with this and with your proposed deletion of the we don't need the sentence, the details of this procedure are under investigation.
That doesn't make much sense in the policy.
Right. So I'm fine with this unless someone else raises a question about it.
But I'm not clear actually on how this would be implemented, but.
Okay.
Because, you know, until the registrars provide updated WHOIS information, the registrar of records, that any information? Or?
Well, Steve, I think we have the fundamental problem that we don't have at this point a binding implementation of any of this.
So,
of the process.
Okay, so let me see if I understand, Steve, your question. You're okay with the language, except what's not clear to you is what the process is that
yeah.
registrant will follow.
Right. Our initial recommendation had said till accurate and verified contact information is available. Now those
yes,
adjectives are gone.
Yeah, I have a problem about accurate and verified that I actually wanted to ask if it's dealt with elsewhere or if this is the place to talk about it.
It's almost like we need to get a glossary. I'm not being cynical. I'm just saying we got into this yesterday.
Have a glossary.
The implementation committee is because we keep coming back to, it's kind of like beauties in the eyes of the beholder. Who determines what accurate, who determines how, what verified means, you know. And then Louis' email to all of us yesterday left it open that much further as to the registrar having a significant amount of flexibility to do everything from shut the guy down immediately, if it's clear, to opening him up. And, you know.
let me deal with the 15 days thing in just a minute, but I want to, the discussion that I heard in my participation in the consultation between the WHO's task force and the implementation committee concerned me that there are people who believe that, because I could submit updated WHO is information, but it would just be another version of wrong data. And this basically says that there's no requirement to make any kind of attempt to be sure that the new data, after there's been false data. So this isn't, you know, this is when someone had, it's been proven that someone has submitted false contact data, and as a result of that, and there's lots of flexibility over here in Louis' discussion, but as a result of that, a registrar has made the decision to delete the name.
Yeah, the only problem, let me take the other perspective just for a minute, not for the sake of argument, but for the sake of clarity. You use the words false. To me, there is a clear definition between false data and the inaccurate data. If somebody erroneously submits inaccurate data, you look at them in an entirely different perspective than you would somebody who willingly submitted false data. And I think Steve's the one who bought out the Donald Duck situation. Microsoft's silly little mistake is inaccurate. Donald Duck is clearly false. How do we establish some way of dealing with those two and stratify them so that it makes sense? Because that's what the registrars keep coming back to.
But Tim, as I understand Louis' guidance document, the registrars have a huge amount of discretion.
That's right.
And what we are saying is, after they've exercised their discretion and a name has been deleted, they made the decision that it was false,
right.
not inaccurate.
Yeah.
They had the right to make that decision. They made that decision. A name was deleted.
That's correct.
Then redemption grace period applies.
Right.
So the person who had the false data is given a chance to redeem themselves, so to speak.
Right.
And I think what we were trying to say previously, you know, this is not your average, you made a mistake and you're losing your name,
I
or your name
that.
Is being dark. This is a... This is, it may not be the most egregious, but at least it's somebody who's been a little egregious.
Right.
And in that case, I'm not sure, and I do think registrars will be very flexible, and they will take into account, certainly all the discussions we heard, they will take into account the remoteness, the language, all those things. But I see nothing wrong with asking somebody who's been a little egregious with taking the step to... provide to the registrar something that denotes this new data is accurate.
Maybe we can, I'm wondering if we can fix this or address this by adding another paragraph which states that the task force intends this policy to have the result that deletion, for whatever reason, and subsequent application of the redemption grace period does not provide a domain name holder with some kind of a backdoor exit out of the registrar's data correction process, whatever this process looks like in detail. We can't make an explicit reference to the process we suggest because it won't be binding, I think, but we can, of course, make a reference to whatever process is going on. That was the fundamental idea of this statement. You can't just let the name leap, reclaim it, and get it back in virgin state.
Well, let me try a...
Okay.
We have the right not to accept a suggested replacement text in entirety, it would seem to me. One possibility would be for the task force to include... accurate and verified, and provide a footnote explaining the intent, as you just did.
Well, that will just get us back into the discussion what's accurate and verified. I think really that it's maybe easier and easier to understand from us registrars if we phrase it in terms of ongoing processes. Basically, a deletion will interrupt a process, and a redemption grace application of a redemption of a domain name may put it into, well, what I call virgin state. We don't want to have it there at this point. It needs to have its historical baggage, and it needs to be, for instance, in registrar hold. I think it should be sufficient to make this clear, because it implies that all the later observations on enforcement of the current policy clearly ought to apply to this one.
Can I ask a question here?
I heard Steve and I heard somebody else.
Well, I asked to be put in the queue, but let's see.
Okay,
Steve and then Kent. Put me in that.
Okay. Maybe I need the glossary here too, but my impression is that if some version of what the implementation committee recommends as far as dealing with complaints is adopted, what's going to happen with most registrations that have false contact data or there's no response, you know, the clear cases, is that they're going to go in registrar hold, not that they're going to be deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And in which case, maybe this is less important, although I do think the implementation committee really failed to give us any implementing instructions here. Maybe it's less important because it would be, there probably wouldn't be very many registrations that would be deleted for false contact data.
I think Steve's interpretation is correct. I think very few registrars will delete for false contact data until it becomes so certain and so clearly egregious, and there is so little follow-up that I think what you'll find is they'll be put on registrar hold, and the only problem will be how do you deal with those situations in that redemption grace period before it gets deleted. You know, they're going to give every possible opportunity for somebody once it goes on registrar hold to redeem themselves morally or whatever, you know what I mean.
Let me ask a question then. So, Steve, the hypothesis that you're making is that there may be a big number of names that are on register hold, but that's not what we're talking about here, because this is when registrations are deleted.
Yeah, I think that's what this is referring to, isn't it?
So, I guess, and Ken, your comment, I think, is helpful. Can we just flag for ourselves to ask ourselves, when we look at the instructions to ICANN, what kind of reporting we have asked ICANN to ask the registrars for? Because if this is resulting in names being put on register hold and held for a year or more, you know, it seems to be sort of, you know, perhaps that's the registrar's option to do. I think our objective here is to focus on accuracy.
Right. Can I comment now, or you want?
Oh,
to
sure.
Okay.
Yes.
First of all, I have two questions to ask before I comment. Number one, is this being recorded or just being notated at this point in time?
It's being recorded and notated.
Okay.
Ken.
Well, then I can't say what I'd like to say, just because I wish I could go off the books here for a minute.
Can you turn off the recording for a moment, if that's helpful?
You can turn off the recording, and I won't produce the recording.
Well, it's up to Marilyn as to whether she wants to do that or not.
I'm happy to have us go into private session at this time. Tony, is that concurrent with you?
Yes, no problem.
Okay.
Okay.
Wait. So, Glenn, you're going to turn the recording off?
Yes.
And we will just note that the task force went into a private discussion.
Right. Good.
All right. Here's the way I see it at this point in time, and I think Bruce made the point yesterday. What you have in the registrar constituency is a stratification. You all are aware of that. There are some registrars who are operating with margins that allow them to go the extra mile and do really, in my opinion, what should be done. with a lot of the process. And I think Bruce talked about the verification on resubmissions of data, how they deal with it in Australia, and made the comments that there are certain registrars who will do that. You have some registrars that either have models that allow them to sell domains either directly or through resellers with margins that literally make it impossible for them to do anything that does not that is beyond something they can automate. And I think what's happening and what you'll see is you're going to get pushback from those low-margin registrars, because realistically, what we're talking about involves an additional cost. You know it as well as I do. The minute you eject a human being, the minute you have to look at paper, make phone calls, put a stamp on a letter, whatever it is, you're increasing the cost. Now, personally, I feel that the follow-up procedures, many of the follow-up procedures that we're discussing, make sense. Okay, they don't make sense in some cases, and where it's literally impossible. I use the classic case of a guy clips you a listing from the white pages in the Athens phone book. I don't know. I can't read Greek. I'm not a Cyrillic kind of guy. So, but at the same point in time, there are clear cases where the data that comes back, phone number 1234567 or stuff like that, it's just ridiculous. I think what we need to do is we need to make sure that we design a process where if the process is abused by anybody, it clearly stands out and there are sanctions or something that can be done for noncompliance. The problem is I don't know how you're ever going to get the registrars to necessarily get a full consensus on that, and the reason very simply is a lot of these rapidly growing registrars right now are doing it because they're buying business, and I don't buy into it myself. I think I just think that there's got to be a way of dealing with this, and I think we hurt ourselves by working to the lowest common denominator all the time. That's why I had to go off the record, because what I'm saying to you guys is I think there has to be additional effort there. And I think at some point in time we have to put our feet in the ground and say, listen, there are additional steps that need to be taken, and if you're not willing to take those additional steps, then we've got some issues there. If the only thing you're saying is you'll take anything the guy sends back, and you make the definition of accurate and verifiable so loose that nobody needs to do anything and that somebody has to scream all over again, then we aren't accomplishing a hell of a lot. I hope you understand why I asked you to let me go off the record on it.
Okay, can I get in the queue?
Me too, please.
I have Tony. I have Abel. Anyone else?
One other thing before they go back in the queue. What I am doing, in effect, is repeating a lot of things you've heard over and over again, not just from Ken Stubbs, but from other people, other registrars who are concerned about these
issues. I appreciate that. We are still not going to turn the recording on. So I have Tony, and then I have Abel.
Yeah, I just want to say that I agree entirely with Ken. I think he made an excellent point there. And perhaps the way around this would be, let's say you get to a stage where, for the second time, somebody has sent false data. You had a second complaint on the same registrant, right? And he's already supposedly corrected his data. Shouldn't there be some mechanism whereby, when you could build this into the registrant agreement when he buys the registration, where if at a certain stage in these complaints, let's say he has two successive complaints, you would put his registration away on the shelf or on hold or whatever it is, and he would have to, in order to be able to submit a third time his supposedly accurate data, the verification process would be at his cost. In other words, he'd have to agree to pay $20 or $30 or $40, whatever it is. So the registrar can pay some agency or institution to do the verification.
That might be
for this code, the registrar can run verification himself, or in the sense of giving the registrant an opportunity to prove the exactness of the information. You can do this with chance response. You send a letter, you put a secret in, and you say, okay, now please call me back, please give me the secret which was sent in that letter, and please give me the other secret you always use to identify yourself as a registrant. It's a simple process, and you can, I just expressed it in terms of calling back, but you can automate it.
Let me
already bored the implementation committee to death with this.
Let me manage the queue just a little bit. I'm gonna go to Abel, and then I want to make a and then to Ken, and then I want to make a proposal.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree completely, basically, what Steve says, but we're forgetting a number of things there. Because we're going into a territory where we're writing, or at least proposing, a complete policy. We've got to define then indeed the differences between fraudulent and accidental and so on and so on. But also there's gain to be gotten for less noble registrars here by putting domains on hold. Certainly if the WLS goes into work, those domains may be more worth in the second market than in the prior, so this is very thin ice.
I'm not sure I understand why this discussion is thin ice, Abel. Could you just say that again?
The possibilities you leave open by allowing too much for negotiation, or too much room on the side of the registrar by doing or not doing, and by either putting it on a hold or whatever, is that he has a number of options that are less noble, to put it mildly. Like, for instance, if we look at the WLS, the waitlist system that VeriSign is going to introduce, if I have, as a registrar, a domain that is representing any kind of value in the second-level market in the waitlist system, whereas there are errors or faults in the registration itself, even if it's a move or whatever, giving too much room in that procedure, I, as a registrar, can move this so that I can take it over.
You have some perverse incentives with WLS, and actually I think that the entire registrar hope thing is in part intended to mitigate some of these incentives, because if you have an immediate deletion, then you have this domain name hijacking situation. You play the WLS subscription, you file an accuracy complaint over Christmas, and hope that the registrar has a very strict accuracy process. The end would be a deletion and an immediate re-registration for the complainant through WLS.
Yeah, what I'm saying is
that particular incentive by introducing registrar hold. But what you're saying is, of course, that if registrar has too much discretion, you can put it on registrar hold and can basically do hoarding, right?
Yeah, not only the hoarding, he can also then decide himself when the deletion will take place,
and hence have
a very profitable position in that way.
That's the incentive beyond hoarding.
So that's why I'm saying we're threading on thin ice. The second we're going to do something with it, we're talking about a rather illicit part of policy making and a lot of definitions in order to contain the risk that you're opening up.
That was more or less what I was going to be following up with Abel with anyway. Also, on the other side, we need to make sure that we do not create a process that allows people to abuse the challenge process. Because, and I'll use as an example, suppose you get somebody like a Richard Henderson who gets very upset with a specific registrar, so he just arbitrarily challenges every single name. Or something along that line to, quote, make a point. And then even after the data is resubmitted, then re-challenges the name just to give somebody a hard time. We've got to make sure that we don't allow the process to be gamed on one side or abused on the other side. That's where we get criticized.
Okay, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to make a proposal, and I think the last point that Ken made, I hope, we can address when we talk about what the process of notifying about inaccuracy, to go back to the discussion we were having last time, which was, should the reports come through ICANN so that there's a mechanism of metering them, so complaints that are received of the nature that you just described, Ken, would never actually ever be dealt with by the registrar because they would never actually encounter them. I'm going to make a proposal about this particular. It seems to me that in the issues work on remaining work, that the task force is concerned enough about the need for a reasonable and affordable process to ensure that accurate data is provided when there are repeat, I hate to use the word, let me use the word occurrences, and we could suggest that that needs to be, that further work on establishing a reasonable and affordable accuracy process should be undertaken.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it has to be undertaken, and we could, for instance, ask the staff to make a recommendation along the lines that Thomas was suggesting, or that that I think Tony was suggesting, that could be put forward.
Okay. Actually, Marilyn, I think that this discussion actually belongs slightly later in the implementation committee thing. Maybe we can try to keep all this in the back of our heads and return to it when we come to this procedural thing, and maybe try to get, first of all, to get some kind of settlement on the redemption grace period recommendation and then go on, because that one still seems to be open. Actually, I think that if the discussion about, well, personal opinions on what registrars should do or should not do is over, that at this point we should probably turn on the recording again.
Yes.
Oh, the other thing I was going to say is to go on the
Ken, you're not hearable.
Oh, sorry.
The other thing I was going to say, and I think this could go on the record, is I think we keep going back to this term glossary. I want to know exactly, and I want anybody comfortably, Steve, anyone, to be able to clearly understand what is meant by that. For instance, does registrar hold mean the following? Does it mean that under no conditions can a domain be transferred to another registrar when it's on registrar hold? Under no conditions can the domain ownership of the service contract be assigned to transfer until accurate data is provided. The reason being is not just intellectual properties, but law enforcement, anything else. In other words, let's make sure that we understand that what we think is going to happen is, in fact, what everyone else thinks is going to happen. I'd hate to have somebody come along and say, well, we took it out of the root zone, but it was transferred to another registrar, or somebody reassigned the ownership of the management contract to somebody else, because we thought that our job was, when it went on registrar hold, it needed to be taken out of the root system.
The definition of registrar hold is actually in the description of RRP, and I'll just hope that EPP uses the same definition of it, but I'll make that suspicion. We would have to check it, and the definition of registrar hold is, the registrar of the domain sets the domain to this status. The domain cannot be modified or deleted when in this status. The registrar must remove registrar hold status to modify the domain. The domain can be renewed. The domain shall not be included in the zone file when in this status. And before someone streams, it cannot be deleted means you have to remove this particular flag before you send a delete command.
Well, I'll ask you a question, and Steve, you guys are the legal ones. You could step in. How can you possibly renew a domain that's on registrar hold when, in effect, when you're renewing a domain, you're re-ratifying a contract because that's all this is. It's just a management contract between the registrar, registry, and the registrant. And in effect, if you're renewing it, what you're saying in effect is that the information that you're providing at the time that you're entering into a contract for continued management of this domain name is accurate, when in effect the information's never, the accuracy's been questioned and never re-ratified. So to me, those are the examples of what I'm talking about. So that's all. I'm not going to try to drag something like this out any further.
But we are back on the record, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and we need to speed along, I think, if we're going to make progress, because I know we all need to get out of here at some point and figure out what we're doing next. Thomas.
Okay, so what are we going to do about that redemption grace period text? Are we going to add another sentence which basically says that the purpose of this is that redemption grace period does not provide registrants with a way to get the domain name back into the zone file with less accurate data than the registrar's processes would otherwise recommend, would otherwise require? Would that accommodate the concerns we have?
I'm not sure we can entirely answer that until we discuss the next section, or rather your section 3.
Yes, we can't fully.
But in general, I think that that's the right approach, to say that if the focus is going to switch to the registrar hold process, let's make sure that that procedure is right, and we're less concerned about the delete process. But I think the caveat you state is perfectly well taken.
Okay,
sure,
should not
be. Someone will figure out a way to evade this system.
Okay, I'll try to produce some wording and I'll send it via email. I'll just take a brief note and then into zone. Easier. Okay, that should be sufficient for the moment. Okay, the second part of this recommendation structure are consensus policies on bulk access. The implementation committee has observed that marketing purposes or marketing activities that we, as we wrote in the proposed revision to 3363, may need further clarification, but they have not offered alternative wording. So what we should do on bulk access is to stick with our old recommendations. What I have tried to do in this second subsection was to extract the meat of the policy recommendations from the policy report and make it easier comprehensible. So right now it just says use of bulk access WHOIS data for marketing should not be permitted. The task force therefore recommends that the relevant provisions of the RAA be modified or deleted to eliminate the use of bulk access WHOIS data for marketing purposes, period. Section 3363 of the RAA should be changed to read as follows. Change language underlined. It's the same language as in the policy report. Then the next recommendation is section 3366 of the RAA should be deleted. That's the opt-out provision, which would not have any, which wouldn't apply to anything anymore once marketing uses are eliminated. So,
I have a question about that. So marketing purposes are eliminated, but non-marketing purposes are still permitted. Why are we denying the opportunity? Isn't this where the registrant has the opportunity to opt out of any list?
No, he only could opt out of marketing users.
Ah, sorry. Okay.
It was referring exclusively to marketing users, so it was an empty. It would be pretty much an empty regulation at this point. And well, the implementation committee had the concern that the marketing purposes should better be defined. There was some discussion, and there is some discussion of this topic in their report. But as I said, no alternative policy is proposed, so this is just my attempt to get a short form of what we said in the policy report with lots of discussion. Any objections so far? In that case, the second consensus policy on bulk access is on resale. And that text on that reads as follows. Section 3365 of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement currently describes an optional clause of registrar's bulk access agreements which disallows further resale or redistribution of bulk WHOIS data by data users. This clause shall be made mandatory by changing Section 3365 as follows, and the only change is to replace the word may by the word shall.
And I think that's so. Are we all happy with this?
Sounds all right.
It should be the same thing as in the policy report, just with much less discussion around it, in order not to confuse people. Okay, let me just put a quote around there. Okay, now comes the interesting part: practical recommendations, accuracy of who is data. I have added there. Cautionary, a brief explanation notice that the recommendations below are based on Chapter 3.1.1 of the policy report, which is most likely the thing you want to look at in parallel to the following discussion. That was the first set of recommendations on enforcement on accuracy of U.S. data, with a headline, Enforcement of Existing Contractual Obligations in the Registrar Accreditation Agreement regarding accuracy of WHOIS data. I've also duplicated that headline just as in the draft. I have done change tracking on this part. The first part of the text, point A, is basically the same as what we had in the policy report, with one exception. Point 3A3. The policy report said that ICANN should post registrar contact points on its website. And I have marked this as deleted because we had some discussions that these should not be published at this point in order to lead accuracy complaints to the InterNICNet form, which could then be used as a data gathering tool for further evaluation. That's the rationale of this change. And I propose that we don't discuss the particular change at this point, but that we discuss it together with the other data gathering exercise, because it's really a set of changes which belong together.
Thomas? I, however, want to propose a change in 4 that I would like to note for people. Based on the previous discussion we had, and we can come back to this, but if we are... I think we are recommending a standardized approach, in which case 4 would read, ICANN should continue to maintain, you would strike optional, and it would read a standardized complaint form.
Well, we can never prevent registrants from sending email to a registrar, a complainant from sending an email to registrars. So an ICANN complaint form will ultimately always be optional, I think.
No. Optional says, I think that we're not preventing anyone from sending any other form, but we are saying that ICANN should maintain a standardized complaint form on the internet.net site.
I would agree with that change if we're going to encourage people to use that channel.
Okay. So I will strike the word an optional and add the word a. Okay, done. I'm wondering if we shouldn't submit this with change tracking in it in order to give people an opportunity to understand where the changes are. Okay, the next thing is a section B in the draft final report. This is an insertion and based on the implementation committee's work. I'd actually like to skip this at this moment because it will be the thing we are going to have the most debate on and go on along the lines of the policy report at this point. The next thing in the draft is section C concerning the 15-day period. I'd also like to defer that and first walk you through the changes to the new section D. This used to be section B in the policy report. This reads, ICANN should modify and supplement its May 10, 2002 registrar advisory as follows. First point remains unchanged. Second point, used to consist of first the observation that ICANN should clearly state to registrars that accepting unverified corrected date, quote, corrected, end quote, data from registrars that have already deliberately provided incorrect data is not appropriate. The text in the policy report went on to detail some of the complaint phrases which the task force was recommending that ICANN should, well, strongly encourage registrars to use. I have deleted that part because that's what the implementation committee found unimplementable and recommended a replacement on. That replacement is in section 3 of the implementation committee's report, and it's point B, I just deferred. Then we have back to the changes to the registrar advisory. The next one used to be the observation that there is no consensus on the task force on the 15 days issue. That's handled separately now, and I think that given Louis's latest advice, some of the discussion in that paragraph is outdated anyway. The last part, in the final report now, E contains the additional recommendation from the task force that used to be part C in the policy report, and it's unchanged at this point. One observation, though, I think we had a comment which said that from a registrar which said that the second point there, registrars should also be responsible for ensuring that their agents provide such reminders, was meaningless. We may, of course, change this and say that registrars should encourage their agents to also provide such reminders, just as a suggestion, but
I must be confused. When AT&T has an agent, we sign a contract with. And why is it that if you have an agent that you have a contract with, that you can't require them to do something?
Okay, right.
Frankly, I agree with Marilyn, and that is, I don't think it's a matter of encourage. I think that there has to be a requirement.
Ken, the thing I was trying to replace appropriately was the language about being responsible.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it is something like registrars. Let me just
should ensure
must advise their agents that they should also provide such reminders because that's under the control of the registrar. They can control whether or not they remind them. They can't control whether or not the agent does it.
One concern at this point, we can't say must ensure or must. Registrars must because this is further advice, so it would be registrars should. Other than that, I think the language is fine. So that would be what? If you could just give it to me in terms of striking and in inserting. Should Marilyn?
Marilyn, why not say registrars are responsible for ensuring their agents provide such reminders.
Something.
I think that's good wording because too often what I hear from registrars who use reseller models and the abuse occurs at the reseller level is, I can't control my resellers. And I'm saying, well, now wait a minute. You're willing to take their money, but you're not willing to be responsible for the ways in which they solicited and dealt with the end user. I can't buy that. That's all.
So
he has the same issues. If somebody makes a representation outside of the agreements that AT&T has with a reseller, AT&T's going to step in and there's going to be some serious butt kicking. You know, you've got your reputation.
Ken, quite frankly, I don't want to get to let this discussion eat up too much of our time because we have the biggest items in front of us. So the last thing I think I heard was basically the same we have. So we just leave it?
Yeah, strike should also be, replace that with R, and then strike the word that.
Are responsible for for ensuring their agents provide such reminders.
Yes, sir.
Is that okay with everyone? I think, actually, I have one concern about this. The thing we will hear from the registrars on this, and which they even may take up in the names council, I could imagine, is that they are not contractually obligated for this. That's a problem with the word are responsible. They may be morally responsible, but they aren't in contractual terms at this point.
In what sense are they not contractually responsible for the resellers? The resellers sell through them, so it's a sale that goes through them. Towards Icon, they are responsible. And the reseller, at least to the two cars model, has a contract which he has to simply uphold.
Abel, it is currently phrased in terms of registrars should be responsible. The proposed alternative wording was registrars are responsible for ensuring that that resellers do a certain thing. Registrars don't have a contractual obligation to ensure this. We are at this point suggesting that they do something.
No,
for that reason, I'm hesitant about the responsibility language.
Yeah, but as far as I see it, they cannot have a contractual obligation for resellers because at the time the contracts were made, the reseller model wasn't even born. But by a standard in business, you are responsible for your resellers. That's not a new invention, and that's not something that we pick out of the blue sky. The reseller is a representative of the company, and even if he's an agent, he acts on behalf of the company within the limits of his contract. And if he supersedes the limits of that contract, there is hell to pay between the contractees, but there's still a responsibility of the company.
I would the contracts are written in accordance with California law, and I would assume that agency is a law in California. you correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume the reseller agent principles responsible for the action.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm saying is I want to be sure that we do not produce a sentence which can be used to attack this report by a misinterpretation which says you are trying to ascribe a new RAA responsibility to us. That's all I want to ensure. And we have no, at this point, we're not discussing the substance, it's just how do we express it in a way that can't be used against
Well, this is kind of alleviating.
Let me propose how we do this. Can you draft this as an inquiry to Louis?
How to phrase it?
Yes.
Okay. Should I just send an email to him?
Yeah, just send him an email, and he'll get back to you today.
I'm going to have to apologize. As much as I would have liked to stay on to the bitter end, like I said before, I wasn't...
thanks, Ken.
And I apologize if I've dragged something out here. I was just trying
to... No, you did exactly the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you for taking me off the record and respecting that. I appreciate it.
Well, Ken, whenever we all finally get together in person, we're going to make you buy the first round of beer.
I apologize. I know you got a lot of work to do. I'm just trying to make sure that we can get this thing done. That's all.
Thanks.
Can I suggest now that since all of us have time pressures, can we turn to 3B, which is, as Tom has said, is the most important report?
We need to do that, but let me do one thing before Ken leaves. I propose that we change the call next week, Wednesday, because Thomas is traveling on Tuesday and not available. And I think we would then have a final document, and the purpose of the call would be to really, because we need to post it.
I'm fine any time after 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Marilyn.
Okay, can we real quickly do others?
I can't make it Wednesday at 11 Washington time.
I just don't think we can do this productively without Thomas, so we'll...
this is Christy. I can make it on Wednesday.
I can at least try.
Okay.
This is Ritika. I can make it on Wednesday.
Steve?
I'll try.
Okay.
You want Becky? You still there?
So let's try. Tony, is there a time you can make it?
A little complicated. I've got two meetings in succession here.
Okay.
Which are board meetings.
Okay. I think we're going to go ahead and do it on Wednesday, and I will just work closely with you on this then, if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Okay, then it's Wednesday. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Marilyn, and I apologize.
No, no, that's fine. Okay, we're turning to 3B. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay, 3B is the replacement for the following language from the policy report. I suppose that I should read it to you. The language of the policy report was first the thing about accepting unverified corrected data. It is termed and it is phrased in terms of an amendment to the registrar advisory. The text which has been removed and replaced by B is the following. Accordingly, where registrars send inquiries to registrants in this situation, they should require not only that registrants respond to inquiries within 15 days, but that the response be accompanied by documentary proof of the accuracy of the corrected, quote, corrected data submitted, and that a response lacking such documentation may be treated as a failure to respond. The specifics of acceptable documentation in the situation should be the subject of further discussions. This was identified as not being implementable by the implementation committee, and they tried to work out some kind of a process which could work. And this process is what Fund Report B contains. The following process should be employed in handling accuracy complaints. Upon receiving a complaint about who is accuracy, a registrar may seek evidence or justification from the complainant. So if the complaint looks implausible, the registrar can go back and say, give me something which provides some evidence that this doesn't work. Tell me you tried to phone him. Show me an email bounce. Show me a return letter. Some evidence can be asked. That's the first step. Second step, if the complaint appears justified, then a registrar must, at a minimum, send an email to all contact points available in the WHOIS, including registrant, admin, technical, and billing contacts, for that domain name, with first a copy of the current disputed WHOIS information and requesting the WHOIS contact information be updated if the information is incorrect, and a reminder that if the registrant provides false WHOIS information, that this can be grounds for cancellation of their domain name registration. At this point, there are two alternatives in the text, and I think I will go on with the second alternative from the implementation committee and then leave it to Steve to propose some or all of the first alternative, which was drafted by him. I think that's the easiest way to do this. So in the implementation committee's report, I should add that Steve drafted this before the implementation committee's final report came out.
Yeah,
fairly new language.
Most of
and after the call. So some of this may just be obsoleted. That's why I want to go ahead with the implementation committee first and then turn over to Steve. I think that's easiest. Okay? Steve, acceptable?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, we are now at the point where the registrar has sent that inquiry to the registrant. Third step is, when the registrant responds, a registrar must take commercially reasonable steps. For instance, apply some heuristic automated data verification techniques, possibly via an automated tool centrally provided by ICANN, to check that the new WHOIS information is plausible. If the data is found to be not plausible, the registrant must provide further justification, which may be documentary evidence, before the data will be accepted. Step 4. If no response is received or no acceptable data has been provided after a time limit to be agreed, a registrar must place a name in registrar hold or equivalent status until the registrant has updated the WHOIS information. Step 5, for a name to be removed from registrar hold status to active status, the registrant must contact the registrar with updated WHOIS information as per 3 above, and the registrar must confirm that the registrant is contactable via this new information for example, by requiring that the registrant respond to an email sent to a new email contact address. That's the end of the text provided by the implementation committee. And, well, if we still have an alternative proposal, it's Steve to make.
Well, what appears above this, as Thomas said, is based on what was the implementation committee's position up until, I think, about 12 hours ago, or 18 hours ago, which is what you see, what he's just read you, and I'm seeing it for the first time here. The main question here is being, because I think 3 and 4 are very similar on both of these. The main question here is what happens if 3 and 4 both say that if there's a complaint that's sent forward to the complainant, that the registrar then has to use an automated tool or take commercially reasonable steps, which could be an automated tool, to see if the newly submitted information is plausible. The question then is what happens if it's not plausible. As I understand it, the new implementation committee proposal is that the registrant must provide further justification which may be documentary evidence before the data will be accepted. And my formulation had been that the registrar shall make further contact with the registrant and exercise its best judgment as to whether any information received in response is adequately verified or documented as accurate. I don't think there's really a lot of difference between those. 3 as it stands now, one concern I have with 3 as it stands now is with 4 as it stands now, is not clear, or as it stands in the implementation committee draft, it's not clear what the time limit is being measured from, whether it's being measured from the first inquiry or from the second inquiry. And my concern about 5, I think basically I'm in agreement with this, only that this is going to allow material to data to remain in WHOIS if the email address is accurate, even if the rest of it is not accurate.
There is a word, for example.
Well, all right.
I think you left open how to verify postal things.
Okay.
So, Steve, if we could just come down to
I don't think there's very much difference between these two versions.
Could you be comfortable with our accepting the task? The implementation committee's language, and as necessary, making a couple of insertions in it?
Yes, I think so. I need to look at it and compare it to what I had prepared based on what they had up until last night.
Because one thing that occurred to me, not to beat this issue of 15 days anymore since we have Louis' statement, but one thing that occurred to me in looking at it is the sentence that, you know, that the reference to time frame can just be the time period specified in Section 3.7.7.2 of the RAA or an applicable policy.
That text was my crime, and it's in the part we just deleted.
Oh. It was deleted.
Marilyn, so text from the implementation committee is below the red line of equal signs.
So I was reading from your report.
Yes, in the final report draft.
Right.
There is a line with 5 equal signs which says draft text implementation committee.
Yes.
Between that line and the line with the letter signs, the other red line, that's the text from the implementation committee, and that's the one
I know.
But there's nothing on 3772 or applicable policy in it.
I know. I was making a proposal.
Ah, okay. Sorry. Sorry. It just sounded like the text you had deleted.
No. Sorry. I was just saying that if we go with the implementation committee's text and just make minimal insertions to the points viewed as necessary by the task force, that will probably be most acceptable to the implementation committee. And I think Steve is.
Yes, I agree. We should work from their draft now that they have a final draft.
Right.
And I think this is basically acceptable, but I think there are a few gaps that we would want to point out. One is what the time period is measured from. What the meaning is of, for example, in the last parentheses. But I think basically this certainly responds to at least some of the concerns that I had placed in the proposed response to the implementation committee report, the thing that was circulated on Monday.
Right.
So it responds to that because it doesn't have to just be resolution policy, and it at least spells out to some extent what should happen if implausible data is sent in and so forth.
Actually, one point on this time period to be agreed. The purpose of that change was to basically separate the process from the 15 or 30 days discussion, which was a very hot topic yesterday and may have cooled down since Lewis' letter. But the purpose of this was to make the separate recommendations in the implementation committee's report, which can be treated separately in our report.
I have two weird questions about this, though. First of all, how do we define plausible? And second of all, the first sentence has the word may. What if he doesn't want to?
Where are you in the text? Which first sentence?
Hold on one second.
First sentence of what?
This was the one I had.
I could try to answer the first question while you look for that. I think plausible in this context means that you've taken the commercially reasonable steps to check it, and the examples are given of applying a heuristic automated data validation technique. We're basically saying you've got to do something to screen out the obviously false and implausible data. It doesn't spell out exactly which tool you have to use. But the
reason why I'm saying this is if most of you have read the Microsoft discussion, undoubtedly that went on very briefly on the GA list about the implausible address of Microsoft, the Microsoft way.
But it isn't implausible.
That's not implausible at all. It's very plausible. And I can name you a dozen other addresses in Europe that would sound very improbable, but are very proper.
If you run it against an automated data validation technique, and there are many of them out there that have street addresses in the United States. The United States, everyone agrees, it's easier to do this than some other countries. But they would all, the post office knows it the Microsoft way. And so you run it against the post office list, and it'll come up okay. It will be plausible.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's plausible. Steps don't apply, but if it comes up as a street that doesn't exist in the town or in a town that doesn't exist in the United States, then it's not plausible, and that's when you have to ask for further justification. And then the question is, well, what do you have to do with that further material? And this doesn't really say what you have to do. And my proposal said you have to exercise your best judgment. Because I think this is the point at which you have to have a human being look at this.
I agree with that part. But then, as I said, plausible is a very broad term, and despite all good odds. But I'm not falling over. I just want to stipulate the fact that there are probably some addresses that even with the best of software, the best of techniques, will not be considered plausible while they're very real.
That's why it no longer says, it doesn't say you lose you go into register or hold if it's implausible.
Yeah.
It just says you have to ask again.
And then the second part I had was B1, a registrar may seek evidence or justification.
upon receiving a complaint about who is chief.
Well, I think that's May because, as we said in our draft comment on this, there probably should be a field in the complaint form in which it says you explain why you think this is inaccurate, and that probably would make it unnecessary to seek evidence or justification from the complaint.
And ultimately, you may also have complaints which end up with a human being, and the registrar just can say, okay, this is a valid complaint. For instance, think about a home.com address as a contact. It's obviously implausible. You don't need further evidence for that. And by the way, I can assure you there are still contacts around with home.com addresses. You know, I got that free contact address sample some time ago, and there are addresses of that kind in it.
Yeah, but still, the way I'm just looking at it from a different angle, I assume. But as it is written now, the registrar has the decision on whether or not to seek evidence.
Yes.
Where, as I would say, upon receiving a valid complaint, a registrar must seek evidence. Now his only discrepancy lies in whether it's a valid or an invalid complaint.
No, I think
in this sentence, he can even a valid complaint put aside, because it says may seek and he chose not to.
Huh? Wait a moment.
I think this is not. You're confusing two things here. This is getting more evidence from the complainant, not from the registrar. All this is saying is that if a complaint comes in that that doesn't make any sense or that doesn't seem to give an invalid address or make a complaint or maybe it's off topic, that the registrar doesn't have to send that out to the registrant.
No, I can understand. Yeah. Complaint. Yeah.
I think that's all that's intended to be.
Okay. This is. I'll think about it.
Okay.
I'm email you later about it tonight. I'm just. It's okay. I'll email later about it.
Okay.
As it is now, it's okay.
Okay. We need to move along. Thank you for that exchange. And Steve, you're going to do some redrafting.
Yes.
Okay.
Wait a moment. Redrafting on what?
Steve is going to take.
What I'm planning to do, Tom, is see if there's anything in this 3, 4, 5 that needs to be clarified. I mean, I think basically this is right, but if there's any gaps that need to be, or we might want to
suggest
something either in the text or in our comments. That's all I'm thinking.
Okay, and you're probably also going to redraft the Chapter 2, which discusses the Implementation Committee report.
Right.
This was just, if we are already talking about process, there's one thing I'd like to ask. I'll still be available for changes for the next 36 hours. After that, I may get offline for 2 days until Wednesday. So if you want another draft from me which has anything merged, it would have to arrive here within, the next 24 hours to really work. Just if you want it, you have an opportunity during that time, and after that it will get difficult. Anyway, I think we still have C in front of us, and that's a 15-day discussion.
Right.
After reading Louise's letter, is somewhat less relevant, I think.
I would say that much of our discussion could have been shortcut had we had this interpretation earlier, but we didn't.
Oh, yes.
if we go to what our recommendation was, and I think I tried to... I think what we were saying is that... I think it is appropriate for the staff to still determine whether there is any harm that is occurring from present policy.
Can we
generally? I was going over. Basically. Yes, we had input from both the implementation committee and public comments, but those comments were based on a misunderstanding of what the current policy is.
Yes.
So what I would propose to do is to put that sentence in there to include as an attachment to our document Louie's email, and to strike the sentence that says the task force recommends that a separate policy development process should quickly be undertaken to investigate such a change, and strike the next sentence, and to keep the next sentence, which says ICANN staff should use the enforcement mechanism presently in place as well as other means as a tool to gather information on the effectivity and safety of the of that mechanism. And maybe we just reword this to say that ICANN should staff could should continue to monitor the existing policy.
Yeah, or monitor how section 3.7.7.2 is being implemented.
Right. It's being when you say implemented, you mean by the registrars.
Right.
It's being yes. So we would make those changes. We would strike those two sentences and say ICANN staff should continue to monitor how section 3.7.7.2 of the current blah 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 is being implemented by the registrars.
Marion, wouldn't it be slightly more opportune to finalize this part on Wednesday and to do some drafting on it by email?
I think so, but I just want to get concurrence on the intent here. And what I would say is something like, and report back to the council regarding
right.
any apparent need for further policy development.
Actually, I'm wondering if we shouldn't. I mean, we should not forget it. We have to comment and we have to address them. So I think you're right that we should keep it here. I was about to propose to move this into the review process section, but I think that would draw unnecessary fire because people won't read it.
And it's closed as far as I believe that. But except for the fact that we all agree that the ICANN staff should report, and then the council can decide what, if any, other action is needed.
So the important thing to say here, current specified in section, blah, 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 period. This desire, something like this desire, was based on the interpretation.
I think maybe these concerns. Or I'm happy with it either way, but right, with the concerns that were expressed, because people were expressing concerns.
Yes. Expressed were based on the interpretation that the 15-day period was mandatory. Period. Communication received from ICANN's General Counsel, that would be a link, indicates that, and actually I think we could just cut and paste something from Louis' letter. So, communication received from ICANN's General Counsel indicates that, quote, the current contractual structure of requiring the registrar to retain the emphasis right to cancel if the customer fails to respond in 15 days, but not requiring the registrar to exercise this right, is intended to give the registrar the flexibility to use good judgment to determine what action should be taken upon a customer's failure to respond to an inquiry about who is in accuracy. The task force believes that this interpretation of the current contract situation addresses the concern.
Yes.
Period.
I'm happy with that. Anyone else?
I want to take a look at that in writing. But it's
fine.
Yeah, me too. Because it doesn't sound like I will be really happy with it, but that's no problem.
Is there a lot of
interference on the phone right now?
I'm sorry?
Is there a lot of interference? Can people hear interference?
I can hear music.
So what's the entertainer?
Lots of attenuation.
Music just stopped. Scott Joplin. Public performance, right?
Guys, I am sorry, but I am going to have to leave at 1. And I know we're all running out of time.
Yes.
We have a new recommendation, which I hope is uncontroversial, and that's about the review process.
That looks fine to me, and I'm going to have to drop off here also.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
it's you. Cut and paste from transfers.
Yeah.
Minus dispute resolution and with a replacement of DNSO for GNSO.
Right. And then Steve is redrafting the implementation committee report. And then